Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, which is chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. The verse for this morning is text 65.
Sa esha lokan ati chanda bego nikarshasi tam kalu kalayanaha Bhutani Bhutar Anumeya Tattva Ganavalir Vayu Iva Vishashyaha Vishayaha.
Translation: My dear Lord, your absolute authority cannot be directly experienced, but one can guess. By seeing the activities of the world, that everything is being destroyed in due course of time. The force of time is very strong, and everything is being destroyed by something else, just as one animal is being eaten by another animal. Time scatters everything, exactly as the wind scatters clouds in the sky. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The process of destruction is going on according to the law of nature. Nothing within this material world can be permanent, although scientists, philosophers, workers, and everyone else are trying to make things permanent. One foolish scientist recently stated that eventually life will be made permanent through science. Some so-called scientists are also trying to manufacture living entities within the laboratory. Thus, in one way or another, everyone is busy denying the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and rejecting the supreme authority of the Lord. However, the Lord is so powerful, He destroys everything in the form of death. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 10:34, Mrityu sarvaharash chaham. I am all-devouring death. The Lord is just like death to the atheists, for He takes away everything they accumulate in the material world. Hiranyakashipu, the father of Prahlad, always denied the existence of the Lord, and he tried to kill his 5-year-old boy due to the boy's unflinching faith in God. However, in due course of time, the Lord appeared as Nrisimhadev, killed Hiranyakashipu in the presence of his son. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 13, Text 47, an often quoted verse. This killing process is natural. Jivo jivasya jivanam. We've all heard that so many times. That's the reference. 1:13:47. One animal is food for another animal. Then Prabhupada gives examples. A frog is eaten by a snake. A snake is eaten by a mongoose. And the mongoose is eaten by another animal. In this way, the process of destruction goes on by the supreme will of the Lord. Although we do not see the hand of the Supreme Lord directly, we can feel the presence of the hand, of that hand, through the Lord's process of destruction. Then another example. We can see the clouds scattered by the wind. Although we cannot see how this is being done, because it is not possible to see the wind. Similarly, although we do not directly see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can see that he controls the process of destruction. The destructive process is going on fiercely under the control of the Lord. But the atheists cannot see it. Sa esha lokan ati chandavego vikarshasi tum kalukala yanaha bhutani bhutair anumeya tatvo ganavanir vayur ivave ivavishayaha. My dear Lord, your absolute authority cannot be directly experienced, but one can guess by seeing the activities of the world that everything is being destroyed in due course of time. The force of time is very strong, and everything is destroyed by something else, just as one animal is being eaten by another animal. Time scatters everything, exactly as the wind scatters clouds in the sky. It's a nice topic. Understanding Lord Vishnu, because the object of the song sung by Lord Shiva is Lord Vishnu. And how are we to understand that which is beyond our senses? Adhokshanja. He is beyond the range of the senses. So how are we to understand that? Very interestingly, anumeya tatvo or tatvaha is presented, much like Rupa Goswami describes in Nectar Devotion, the process of speculation or anumana, or reason and logic, understanding things by inference, has its place in Krishna consciousness, provided the conclusion is acceptance of the personality of Godhead. I'll give two examples where Mother Yashoda used the process of inference, of understanding things by reason and logic. During the Damodar Leela, Mother Yashoda was churning butter from yogurt. And she stopped churning butter because Krishna wanted her to feed him. So she put down the rope, placed Krishna on her lap, gazed at his beautiful face. Even we were hearing recently, just before Lord Nityananda's appearance day, was Varaha's appearance day. And even Varaha was described as having a features that were so beautiful. So what to speak of Krishna? Such beautiful features. She was just enchanted. But she didn't space out. She went on to her business of feeding Krishna. And she was feeding Krishna. And she saw that over on the stove, there was some milk, and the milk was boiling over. So she had to make a decision. And she made her decision based on reason and logic. She thought, if I continue feeding Krishna, which is what he wants, the milk will boil over. But if I rescue the milk, then that can be used for Krishna's service later, and I can come back and feed Krishna. So I can do both things. So she was using her reason and logic. Then when she came back, and Krishna was gone, but she saw a stone, she saw the butter pot, and she saw the butter pot was broken by the stone, and there was yogurt and butter all over the floor. She used her reasoning and logic capacity to conclude Krishna must have done this. She didn't see Krishna do it because she was over at the stove. But she used her reason and logic. So we can also use our reason and logic, and here the song of Lord Shiva is calling upon us to do that. We're being called upon to understand that the time energy, which destroys everything, although we can't see time energy, who's seen time energy? Have you seen time energy? Has anybody seen one? They don't have it in the stores. That's nothing available. Not online in the .com section. Where do you get some time? We can watch our second hand of the watch, tick, 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 but what is that time that's passing? Well, we know that time exists. And time is destroying things. And there isn't an exception, whatever the scientist may say. And people are so foolish. Here's an example of foolishness. Walt Disney, you've heard of Walt Disney. Everyone's heard of Walt Disney. A very famous mudha. Materialist. A fruitive worker. We won't call him mudha. When he made an arrangement so that when he died, his body would be frozen. So that when they figured out how to make deathlessness, his body could be thawed out, and then he could become deathless. That was in his will. Avajananti mam mudha. Or here's another one. They're those persons that are the theoretical scientists in the field of information technology. They have concluded, it's their premise that all the functions of personality are but electrochemical events that take place within the neurons of the body. And if you can make a backup copy of the brain and the neural patterns within the brain, they just store it somewhere. And when they figure out how to make the rest of the body work just to match the neural patterns of the brain, then you can be eternal. Just store that backup copy somewhere, and when they figure the rest out, because all personality is anyways, is electrochemical events of the brain, just make a backup copy. When they figure out how to do the rest, you'll come to life again. So people pay to have a neural brain scan and have it put in a vault somewhere, so that when they figure out how to make life eternal, you just take that thing out of the vault, the backup copy, and you come to life again. And people pay. And people sell. The cheaters and the cheated. As Prabhupada would say, and this is going on. But the time energy, or time, acts, the comparison is being made here, ganavalir vayu iva, like the clouds in the sky and the wind. So the sun makes the clouds in the sky, and the wind disperses the clouds in the sky, or moves them wherever they move, because that's the force of the wind. But who has seen a wind? You can see the effect of wind, but you can't see wind. So those who say, well, show me God, we can say, show me wind. Or we can say, show me an electron. Has anybody seen an electron? But there's vast science. Electronics is huge. All about electrons, which no one has seen even one of. But we can see how it works, and based upon how it works, we know it exists. And it has certain properties and qualities, and you do this and that happens, you do another thing happens. And that's, you know, the push and pull, the cause and effect of the electron. You can spin one, you can race one, you can smash one, you can do all kinds of things with electrons. You can't even see one of them. So, being unable to see God, that's how the verse begins. Your absolute authority cannot be directly experienced. Cannot be directly experienced. His authority cannot be directly. But his authority is manifested in terms of the impact. Everything is destroyed. Say it reverse. There's nothing that comes into being that doesn't go out of being. It's one of the arguments that Prabhupada presents to the atheist. If you say, I don't believe in God, well, can you show me God? If you become a devotee, if you become filled with prema, a love for Krishna, you can see God. But if you don't, you'll see him in the form of death. Without exception. Show me God. You'll see him in the form of death. Although you won't be able to see him like you can see your hand. But you can understand his presence by inference. So that's this anuman. Anumeya tattva. There's a very nice reference in the prayers by the Nagapatnis in the Kaliyadamana Lila that I particularly like. There's no purport there. But these are wives of the Kaliya serpent, and they're speaking, O my Lord, I'm paraphrasing now, but your transcendental activities are most wonderful. Your existence can be inferred, that's this inference, anuman, your existence can be inferred by the necessity for a creator and a revealer of all cosmic manifestations. It's called intelligent design argument. You've heard this one before? Oh, educated Vaishnavas here in the assembly. Intelligent design. I'll give you a little background. Once upon a time, there was a fellow named Charles Darwin. And Charles Darwin made certain propositions. One of them was that by the process of survival of the fittest, there is in process of, in turn, natural selection, where forms of life evolve from one form to the next form, or evolution of species takes place. Origin of Species was the book. So, in that Origin of Species book, it doesn't speak much, only very little, about where life comes from. Because Darwinian evolution is not where does life come from, but it's once there's life, how do you get variations? Once there's life, how do you get varieties of life? Varieties of life come about, according to Origin of Species, is through gradual, over time, gradual modifications or chance differentiations of, like, the beaks of birds or the color of a fox or something, and they live because the environment makes it such that they're more likely to survive, and so they survive. His hobby was he was a pigeon breeder, and you can make white pigeons from white pigeons and gray pigeons from gray pigeons, and you can make black, you can make different shapes of beaks and different things by breeding. So by studying breeding, you can understand you can make slight modifications in offspring and over generations, more and more variations and so on. So where does life come from? He doesn't speak much about that, but he speaks a little, very little. And the little that he says is the primordial soup idea, basically. You know, coming from elements, in evolving more and more complex forms, you get life. And he says, if that's not shown to be true, or if that's not true, then my whole theory falls apart. So, chemical evolution is a precursor to variation of species. It's all mechanistic, and you don't need God at all. So intelligent design says, simplify it. It keeps reducing and reducing to where does all the variations of species come from? It comes from the configuration of the amino acids in DNA. And from these amino acids in this DNA, you get these color eyes. And from those amino acids in this DNA, you get different color eyes, or different shaped beak, or different tail, or a different claws, or the variations, or it's all within the information that's stored within the DNA. So then the question arises, how did that information get stored in the DNA? And the more logical explanation is that it didn't just happen by chance, but it happened by design. And then they go further because of particular strands of DNA. I won't bore you too much, but there are scientists that have spent their entire life studying the flagella means the tail, the wagging tail, of an E. coli bacteria. Little, like, you know, when you pass stool, it has E. coli bacteria. And some of them have a little tail. So there's some that don't and some that do. So how the ones that don't get a tail? They've spent 30 years studying the tail of an E. coli bacteria. And they've studied it with high intensity, the best magnification possible. And they take pictures. and they find that the tail has 32 parts. And if even one of those parts is missing, that tail won't function. It's just like a car. You know, you can't be absent the alternator or the generator or the starter or the spark plug or whatever. You know, one part is missing, it doesn't work. All the parts have to be there or it doesn't work. So how did it come to be? They look at it and say, well, it didn't happen by chance. Because, you know, I don't get 32 different parts, and just by chance. And then they watch it develop over, you know, one thing after the next thing after the next. It's like, you know, building, here's the frame of the car, and then you put the, you know, put the chassis on the frame, and you put the block of the engine, and then you put the other parts on the block of the engine, and then you put the cover, you know, the gaskets, and, you know, it has to go one after the next thing. And they watch them develop under high magnification and say, it's not chance. Nor is it the other alternative, that the laws of matter are such it had to be that way. It only leaves one other thing. It was designed. So they say that's the more plausible, or by reason and logic, it's a more sensible proposal. And that should be in science books that says the E. coli bacteria's flagella came about by design. It's more reasonable. And it's in the courts in the United States fighting in different states whether that can go into textbooks of schools or not. And most so far the rulings have been no, it can't. Because there has to be separation of church and state. You can't talk about God in science books. It violates the law of separation of church and state. Even it's more reasonable. This is going on. So that's on one end is the creation of life, and the other end is the destruction of life. So Prabhupada refers to this jivo jiva sajivanam example. And so I'll just repeat what he said. A frog. We'll leave out where did the frog come from. He just, you know, where is he going to go? He goes into the belly of the snake. And then where does the snake go? He goes into the belly of the mongoose. Where does the mongoose go? He goes to the belly of the whatever his predator is, a jackal or a fox or a wolf or a... And then where does that one go? He goes into the body of a tiger. And where does that one go? But where's Krishna? Oh, devotees. Oh, theists. Where's Krishna in this picture? And then the next example is just like the clouds in the sky. You don't see the wind dispersing the clouds in the sky, but that's what's causing the clouds to disperse or move in the sky is the wind, although you can't see the cloud. There is something, here's the logic. We all want to live forever, and no one does. Not even Hiranyakashipu can live forever. Everyone has to die. What does that say? There's some force, some power that's greater than all of us that's bringing about death. Anuman, anumeyo tattva. Shabda says, there's a supreme creator, annihilator, and maintainer. Well, supposing I don't know about that one. I don't know if I want to accept that. Then use your reasoning faculty, my dear non-devotees. My dear Mr. Disney. Please consider. There's this something. How does Prabhupada say? He uses it in a very neutral explanation. There's something, there's some force, some power, some entity that's causing the destruction of everything. So you can deny it. I don't believe it. And believe it or not believe it, the believer and the non-believer will be destroyed. It's not subject to your belief. It's like the example Prabhupada gives is, I don't believe, you know, the person who is the lawless man, I don't believe in the state. So there he is, sitting in his prison cell, saying, I don't believe in the state. But he's in prison. There is the state, and he's apprehended, he's put in jail. I don't care for your laws of the state. Okay, don't care for the laws of the state in jail. And the stringent laws of material nature act more tightly upon those that are in defiance of the laws of nature. And conversely, those who are obedient to the laws of nature and recognize the supreme controller beyond, their freedom becomes greater. Up to the point of Narada, where there's no restriction for him. Time and space don't restrict him at all. He can move like that from one part of the spiritual world into the material world, the one part of the material world to another part of the material world, like that, at will. He has unfettered freedom because he's fully in the position of surrender and submission to the personality and Godhead in his service. And it go the other way. Person who's in denial, he's in jail. He's in prison, the prison house of material life. And the amount of freedom is reduced and reduced and reduced and reduced and reduced by that rebelliousness. It doesn't matter how powerful you are, Hiranyakashipu, or how intelligent you are as Mr. Scientist that's trying to create life from chemicals, promising the world, I'll do it. I'll make life eternal. We're working on it. We've made so much progress in so many other areas of science. Surely we will make this one possible also. Trust me. We don't trust them. Such promises. Rather, we take this position. My dear Lord, so I'll read the verse again, we'll end. My dear Lord, your absolute authority cannot be directly experienced, but one can guess, like one can guess, anumeya, by seeing the activities of the world, that everything is being destroyed in due course of time. The force of time is very strong, and everything is being destroyed by some... Oh, there it is. Everything is being destroyed by something else. Whatever that something else is invincible. All devouring time destroys everything. Just as one animal is being eaten by another animal, time scatters everything exactly as the wind scatters clouds in the sky. Krishna. Any comments or questions? Any Darwin fans in the audience that feel disturbed? Yes. The prayers of the Nagapatnis. Well, here's what it says. I'll read it, because I took a note. Your existence can be inferred from the necessity for a creator and revealer of all cosmic manifestations. So, knowledge by inference. Your existence can be inferred by the necessity for a creator and a revealer of all cosmic manifestations. So do you want to modify your question? Or Given that statement, then what's the question? She's writing the question down. Okay. Fantastic. Anyone else? Yes? Unfettered. Ah, okay. No. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not true. Let's just take your life. Do you have more freedom or less freedom? Let's take my life. Do I have more freedom or less freedom? More freedom. I'm restricted, like I was discussing yesterday, that flight in which the yoga instructor was eating anything and everything, and she asked you, you know, asked me why I don't eat anything and everything. He said, because I only take that which is offered to Krishna, and so on. So that's a restriction. But with that restriction, I have more freedom. I have far more freedom than she has. And you, your life, what freedom did you have before? You're bound up tightly by the modes of material nature and, you know, spun around like a top. Now you're voluntarily accepting some restrictions of the senses and the mind, and with that you have so much freedom. Absolute freedom. I mean, in relation, freedom in terms of your real nature. We're controlled, even in the liberated position, we're controlled. We're controlled by the internal potency. Because we're controlled, because we're dependent entities. Freedom from the restrictions of the external energy is the reward of those who are submissive to or surrendered to the personality of Godhead. All kinds of doors open for the devotee that are just there. There's not even a doorknob, what to speak of an apparatus to unlock the door. Much more freedom. Although it looks the opposite. You don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do that, you know. People say, bluntly, what do you guys do for fun? Because that's fun. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's fun. To us, that's misery. It's blocking the real happiness of the soul. The real life of life. It's choking it, smothering it. Okay, here's the question, the Nagapatni question. When I read the prayers of Nagapatnis to Krishna, there was a statement which said, Krishna is the cause of all desires. Ah. Okay, that's a different verse. How do we understand this? Krishna is the, quote, cause of all desires. Well, in the same sense that Krishna is the cause of life, in the sense that life, not speaking of the physical, but the spiritual. Well, you could take the physical also, it's based upon the spiritual. Our capacity to desire is because we have a relationship with Krishna. We're part and parcel of Krishna. And the part has qualities like the whole. As Krishna is the cause of the living entities, Krishna is the cause of the desires of the living entities. He doesn't cause us, you know, turn left or turn right. Or any other choice that we may make. But it's two things. It's by nature, the capacity to have volition is derived from our existence in relation to Krishna, as Krishna's part and parcel. Second is to fulfill those desires, those choices, we're dependent upon Krishna. What's the meaning of what, say it in reverse, what's the meaning of a desire that there's no possibility of fulfilling it? It's meaningless. Even fundamental, the desire to exist, desire to go out of existence, like somebody that may be suicidal. You can't go out of existence. You can't exist or go out of existence. Very fundamental. Without Krishna. He's the sanctioner of everything for the tiny living entity. Then there's the modes of nature. For the materialist. The materialist may think, I want to become rich, or I want to become beautiful, or I want to become an athlete, or I want to become a doctor, or I want something. I have a desire. It's the modes of nature acting. That's all. So from the spiritual side, the material side, we're fully dependent. Our existence on the spiritual level is fully dependent upon Krishna, his existence. And our material existence is fully dependent upon Krishna's sanctioning of anything. He doesn't take responsibility for our desires. We have our desires. He influences our desires. He's influencing us right at this moment. Please come to me. And our response is, let me think about it. Or, I'm working on it. I'm holding on to some things. I'm not ready to let go of yet. But I'm working on it. But Krishna's, he's giving us a desire. Come to me. In full love. Yes. There must be. By inference, by logic. We don't, but we use it all the time at the same time. One of the first things that Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita, his instruction to Krishna, to Arjuna, is understanding how it is, it's by metaphor. Dehinosvanyata dehe komaram yovanam jaratata dehantarat pratyadira satram. It's logic. It's not proof. Shabda is, look, there's a spirit soul, just, that's it. The spirit soul is the animating force of the body, and the spirit soul is moving on. But by logic, and Prabhupada goes through the logic hundreds of times and hundreds and hundreds of times. Where's that baby body that we once had? It's gone, but we're still here. So what's that we? What's that me that's still here? And so on. So, and by logic, when the body is finished, we still exist. And where does that? It goes to the next body. Why do we say that? By inference. Because the baby body is gone, the youth body. The youth body is gone, the young adult body. The young adult body, the old body. The old body, Old man body. Old man body, where's the soul gone? To another body. On the authority of Krishna. So when there's reason and logic, it must match Shabda. Even in Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami makes that point specifically. While Shabda is reigns supreme, we use constantly the other two methods, or in his case, it's another 9 methods. We use them, but we use them under the authority of Shabda. Yes. You have a question on the what?
Time.
Time destroys everything. Okay. An occupation that involves
consumer products.
Short life cycle for consumer products. How do we, what was the last part? How do we process that? How do we decide whether we should do that job or not? You already have the job. Now what do you do? You're a contributor to illusion. Shame on you. Just come and join the temple. There's a lot of service for you over here. Any other question? It's an important step to recognize what you just articulated. Now, should I continue this or should I not continue this? How can I continue this now that I know more clearly what it is that I'm doing? How can I use that in Krishna service? Well, one of the ways that you can use that in Krishna service is by the Krishna consciousness that you carry, you can directly and indirectly influence your co-workers in that workplace. That by sitting over here, I can't. I have no contact with those people, but you do because you're in the workplace. So by your Krishna consciousness, you can influence those people. You know, is it a compromise? Yes. Living in the material world largely is a compromise. Unless we have as the economic base agrarian society. Then, you know, just quit your job, go to a farm, a devotee farm, and engage in sustainable agriculture. And there's no compromise. Although the things that you produce, they're perishable also. But, you know, it's authorized. You know, it's a Vedic practice to provide necessities of life through, and then the spare time, you're cultivating your Krishna consciousness. So if you're going to remain in that arena, you know, it's the same as what you were doing when you were pursuing your higher studies. How can you use that in Krishna service? By influencing the persons who are in that sphere with Krishna consciousness. You can't do that if you're outside that sphere. That they don't have the same regard. Nor do you even have contact. So you use the position of respectability through your higher education to help people with that respect that they may have for you for your higher education to hear the message of Krishna. Now, is there compromise? Definitely there's compromise. But one can use that in service to Krishna, that position in service to Krishna. And whatever fruits that come from that occupation, you see very diligently that they get used in Krishna's service. Although you're just producing some temporary consumer good thing and helping design it and so on. That in itself is ultimately not adding value to the spiritual well-being of the society. Can I continue in this service? How can I continue in this service, this occupation, and increase my Krishna consciousness and serve the Krishna consciousness of others? That's part of the challenge of modern society. Where are you going to find in this modern society something that's pure, that isn't tainted like you described? Things are more or less tainted, but they're all tainted. They're all impure. Find something pure. I challenge you. Find something pure. And even air and water are not pure in Kali Yuga. Find something pure that doesn't have contamination involved in it. So more or less, now reconcile yourself to that reality and go more deeply into the core Krishna consciousness that you carry, and how can that have its impact upon the persons in the workplace and those that you interact with professionally. You use that in Krishna service. Carefully, diligently. One question over here, we're going to end. Go ahead. Hare Krishna. Okay, you speak slower and clearer, if you would. I got the first part. Now, let's move on. Arvindaksha, help me. What's he saying? How to attain purity? Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami Shri Guru Charanapada. That's how you attain purity. You follow the vidhis of sadhana bhakti and it makes the heart pure. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.